Over the last few weeks, the national news cycle has been dominated by one big story, kicked off in large part by a whistleblower in the nation's capital. While whistleblowers may feel like a modern invention, they actually have had a significant impact on the history and politics of the United States. Our next guest writes that one of the first well-known whistleblower complaints, before they even called them whistleblowers, occurred early in the country's founding and led to one of the earliest whistleblower protection laws in the country. And in more recent years, a number of people have released information that raised questions about who is and isn't a whistleblower, including Daniel Ellsberg, Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, Reality Winner, and more. Our next guest recently took a look at the long history of whistleblowing in the United States. Allison Stanger is the Russell Long 60 Professor of International Politics and Economics at Middlebury College. She's the author of the new book, Whistleblowers, Honesty in America, From Washington to Trump. Allison, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's great to be here, Rob.
Well, why did you tackle this long-running history of whistleblowers?
Well, I got really interested in the whole question of how you keep elites honest because of a book I wrote previously called One Nation Under Contract. That last book looked at the privatization of American national security, that is, the use of contractors in all walks of government life where previously government employees would do the same work. And I realized that the line between business and government was becoming very blurry, with the revolving door between the two creating all these conflicts of interest. And I thought, you know, we're really trusting our elites to do the right thing behind closed doors. Is that such a good idea? You know, how do we keep our elites honest? And that's what brought me to whistleblowing, because that's what whistleblowers do.
I think we'll spend a lot of our time in the modern day, but I do want you to take us back to the Revolutionary War, where you point toward the first whistleblower protections being established. What happened?
Yeah, it's important to realize that whistleblowing is in America's DNA. It's not a partisan issue. It's an American issue. And we have the world's first whistleblower protection law dating back to 1778. It came about because the first Commodore of the United States Navy, a man by the name of Essex Hopkins, who hailed from Rhode Island, was essentially abusing his public office for private gain. He did this because George Washington would tell him to engage the British various places, but he had commercial interests, economic interests, that made him instead take the ships elsewhere to serve those interests. So he was removed from his post, and the first whistleblower laws were passed in connection with that incident.
And a lot of the classic elements of whistleblowing, including retaliation against people who spoke out against him, were in place in that situation, right?
That's right. Remember, it's wartime. He's ostensibly first called out for torturing British prisoners of war, but the real reason was this misuse of his office and serving himself rather than the newly United States of America. And Congress legislated to get the whistleblowers out of jail after he had them put in prison for libel. They paid their legal fees. They legislated that all the documents related to this incident should be made public, which is why we know about the story today.
In the modern day, we use the word whistleblower a lot of times in a popular sense. Somebody released some information from the government or corporation or whatever that somebody else didn't want us to know. But under the legal definitions, not all of what we call whistleblowers are really whistleblowers. What makes that line?
Well, you know, it's a judgment call, but essentially the main thing to realize is that all whistleblowers are leakers, but all leakers are not whistleblowers. In other words, what you have to look at in whistleblowing is the content of the complaint. What was the misconduct? It doesn't matter what their motives are. It doesn't matter what happens to them afterwards. All that matters is the content of the complaint, whereas leakers just leak for all kinds of informations. All kinds of reasons. They may do so for policy reasons. They don't like a policy that's being adopted, so they leak to try to kill the policy. But that's not whistleblowing.
Talking to Allison Stanger, her new book is called Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. You spend chapters, Allison, on a bunch of individual cases, each of which we could talk about for an hour or 5 hours for that matter. But one common theme is, what happens with whistleblower protections when we're talking about national security issues? So what that whistleblower, whether or not they follow proper procedure, is releasing dangerous national secrets that could really harm the country. How do we navigate that in our laws?
Yeah, you go right to the heart of the matter with national security whistleblowing, which is the most difficult. Because think about it. If you're a national security employee, you're not supposed to release classified information. But how do you possibly bring misconduct to light without doing that? So it's kind of a catch-22 situation. The laws reflect that. The Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2012, which covers all government employees and protects them from retaliation, explicitly excludes any national security employee. So that's a kind of precarious structure. There's this Intelligence Committee Inspector General system through which the official complaint rose and was turned over to Congress. But that's set up by executive order and another law. But there's some tension between the two. And since people in the intelligence community don't like to reveal secrets, there's a whole series of hurdles to getting those complaints into the public eye. So this intelligence community whistleblower is something of a miracle in my view.
Yeah. While there are whistleblower protections, in some cases in national security and elsewhere, whistleblowers don't always seem, in the cases you give, to be very protected. Why is that?
No. Well, it's the national security realm, which is the most treacherous. But it's true for all whistleblowers. The standard pattern is really they're celebrated when they first do this brave thing. But then when media attention focuses elsewhere, it's another matter. They're retaliated against. They lose everything. Their family and friends are affected. So it's not something for the faint of heart. It's a very self-sacrificing thing to do in all realms, not just national security, but national security is the most precarious.
A common theme, again, that runs through a few of the different cases you give is, okay, if I'm in national security, I think there's wrongdoing here. I try to go through channels in one way or another, and I feel like my complaints are being heard. What I want to go to Congress doesn't go to Congress. Mm-hmm. What then? Is there any kind of recourse to go outside the system legally?
Not really. And that's why you see people like Edward Snowden not even using the official channels and leaving the country. I would argue that given the state of the law at the time, had he stayed and actually complained within the system to the NSA Inspector General, we would never know anything about his revelations because the man in charge at the time of the NSA Inspector General's office was removed from his position in 2016 for retaliating against a whistleblower. So that's why Snowden made his choice to leave the country and leak through the press to get this information to the American people. In my book, I say that he may one day be our first traitor patriot because he initiated this public discussion that we wouldn't have had without him. But he really broke the law to do that.
Do we need changes in our whistleblower system, especially in the realm of national security?
We definitely do, and I think that's one of the best things that could come out of this whole, tumultuous time before us is to see Congress legislate and improve the system so that whistleblowers can complain within the system without fearing for their careers and their livelihood. And it's seen as a positive thing, a way of keeping everybody on the rails and doing what they're supposed to be doing, upholding the ideals they claim to be upholding. That's a pattern in U.S. history. If you look at the whole Inspector General system, the one that's in the news today, that's something put in place in 1978, and it's a response to what we learn from Richard Nixon's abuse of his office. So the same thing can happen after Donald Trump.
We're talking to Allison Stanger about whistleblowers throughout American history. She's the author of the new book, Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about whistleblowers in American politics and history? What role do you think whistleblowers play? Do you have thoughts about any particular person who revealed information, maybe especially national security information, whether they are whistleblowers or not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the role of whistleblowers in American history with Allison Stanger, professor of international politics and economics at Middlebury College. Her new book is Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the history, the past, present, or future of whistleblowing in the United States? Do you have thoughts on any specific case? Edward Snowden, Daniel Ellsberg, the current whistleblower case, TBD, who that is? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. And I wanted to ask, Allison, this current whistleblower, now apparently there's a second one, does it seem like they appropriately went through channels in making their complaint?
The second one we don't know as much about, but the first one we do. And the first one definitely did go through all the proper channels, just ran that gauntlet and did it the right way. And even Trump's intelligence community inspector general has said that the process was followed and the complaint should be heard. And so the second one we don't know that much about yet, but I think we're going to see more in the weeks ahead. Because what's happening and has been happening since Trump's election is that the intelligence community has been behaving in unprecedented fashion. I know this because for my book, I researched and interviewed all the NSA whistleblowers, including Edward Snowden, plus the senior leadership of the NSA. And what I took away from that is they don't behave in this fashion. They've only been doing so since Trump's election because they really feel that the president is a national security threat and he's failing to uphold his oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So I think we're seeing more whistleblowers coming forward. There's one from the Treasury Department that we just learned of, and there will be more in the future.
And the argument from the president and his supporters is this isn't about President Trump. This is about the whistleblowers and the people entrenched in this national security or Treasury bureaucracy who don't like the president, who have a series of personal vendettas. So how do you sort that out?
Well, you just have to look past the spin and focus on the content of the complaint, which is how you define a whistleblower. And if you spend any time with anybody from the intelligence community, you know that they're not partisans. They swear an oath to the Constitution, not the president of the United States. And they're upset because the whistleblower complaint indicates a cover-up of both a national security threat. That's the shadow foreign policy being run through the president via his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and also the Attorney General, Bill Barr. That's completely at odds with the official foreign policy of the United States as administered by the State Department and for which Congress appropriates the money. Congress approved that military aid to Ukraine. So that's unprecedented, and there was a desire to cover that up. But the second thing is the simple matter of foreign electoral interference. I think it's pretty clear that we want Americans to elect our officials and not foreigners. So this is alarming to anybody who's worked in the national security community, and they are responding accordingly, not because they're partisans, but because they're defending the system of the rule of law itself.
I want to talk for a few moments about Edward Snowden, a former NSA contractor. We've touched on him a little bit. Again, we could spend hours just talking about Edward Snowden and everything that came out of that. But what, if anything, did we learn about how our whistleblower system works or doesn't work because of what Edward Snowden unveiled?
Well, that's a really interesting case to look at, because when I did these interviews, you have these two competing narratives from the whistleblowers on the one hand and from the officials on the other hand, and they have absolutely nothing in common. So what I try to do is tease out the truth in that story. And what you learn when you do that is that Snowden really revealed a complete revolution in NSA operating procedures after 9/11. In other words, they put in place emergency measures because the country had just been attacked, and that was understandable and justifiable. But what happened is over time, those emergency measures became business as usual, yet the American people knew nothing about that change. And Snowden really brought that to light and forced us to have a public conversation about it. And Congress revised the Patriot Act in response. So there was a very real legal effect. But again, had he not, in a sense, fled the country and broken laws, we would have never known about that. So he really revealed a kind of creeping national security state that needed oversight, and some has since been put in place.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Rick is with us in La Crosse. Rick, hi.
Well, good morning or good afternoon. my question is, unless I've heard something wrong, is that whistleblowers and the information that they bring forward up until a while ago had to be firsthand. It couldn't be secondhand. And then the rules got changed very, very recently that allowed secondhand overheard conversations to be a whistleblower.
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. There's been a lot of talk about that. Allison, is that something you've looked at?
Absolutely. Well, that's a Trump argument. It's simply false, and his own intelligence community inspector general has said that it's so. There, you know, what matters is the content of the complaint. So it's very common for someone to have a reasonable belief that something is wrong, and then other witnesses are called in, and you investigate to see whether the complaint has any validity. But there's nothing about it having to be firsthand information. The matter is the content of the complaint. We should stay focused on that.
Rick, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Allison Stanger, author of the new book, Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. An interesting point you make in your book, Allison, is how technology has changed whistleblowing from once upon a time you would have had to transcribe your complaints by hand to Daniel Ellsberg, his friends copying page after page of the Pentagon Papers to now one click might blow a whistle. Talk about how technology has changed the landscape for whistleblowers.
You know, that's a great question because you know, I even divide my book into two parts because I think it's such a sea change between the pre-internet era and the internet era. And one of the big things is just the speeding up of the news cycle. It's a 24/7 news cycle. So things are moving so rapidly that somebody can say something that's completely untrue. It's repeated multiple places, and it's hard to dial that back. So I see the internet is playing a major role in kind of confusing the public about what's really going on here. And it's important to stay focused on the facts and to stay focused on the content of the complaint and not the spin that is coming from political quarters. And that's what I hope to contribute to the debate. I'm a tenured academic professor. No one can fire me from my job for anything I say. So I really wanted to I hope that this book can provide a context for dispassionately evaluating what's really going on and what you as an American think should be done about it.
Well, in the news yesterday on that thought, 90 former national security officials released a letter about whistleblowers. Here's a quote from it. A responsible whistleblower makes all Americans safer by ensuring that serious wrongdoing can be investigated and addressed, thus advancing the cause of national security to which we've devoted our careers. So that's from 90 former national security and State Department officials. What do you think seeing a lot of people formerly in the business making a public statement like that?
Well, it's all of a pattern with what former members of the intelligence community and national security community have been saying all along about what they see happening. It really is a complete revolution in how national security is typically conducted, how the intelligence community behaves, and it's all due to President Trump. There's a real departure from norms, and some people, I think, would like to say, well, that's why we voted for him. You know, we sent him there to drain the swamp. But the unfortunate thing that's come to light from these revelations is that the swamp now seems to be in the White House. And that's the problem that we're trying to contend with right now.
And looking ahead in this current case, the president has mentioned and Senator Lindsey Graham has suggested that, okay, if impeachment goes forward, we should hear directly from the whistleblower or whistleblowers talking about the right of the accused to confront their accuser. So the whistleblower system is hypothetically supposed to be anonymous. Is there a point where it needs to stop being anonymous?
I don't think so. I think the ideal world would be you could complain within the organization and the leaders would be committed to serving the people of the United States and would take those complaints seriously and want to improve what they're doing. And if there's any misconduct, they would want to punish the people who are doing it. But unfortunately, we're in a different situation where things that would typically be seen as misconduct, gross misconduct, the president is openly acknowledging he thinks they are legitimate. So you really have this situation. It's a watershed moment in American politics where you have to ask ourselves, do we want to uphold this longstanding constitutional system that has served us so well for so many years? Or do we want to go to mafia contract enforcement where there's no impartial justice and no constitution, no rule of law? So it's a confusing time, but I think core American principles are at stake. And this is not a partisan issue. It's an American one.
You write in your book that the Obama administration, Barack Obama, came into office talking about transparency in office. His administration was very strict with leakers. Is it possible to solve this problem when any given administration wants to keep its own secrets and whistleblowers kind of automatically become a partisan issue depending on which party's in power?
Yeah, so that's the real problem. We've got to really restore a sense of civic duty and understand that whistleblowers are trying to keep us true to our ideals, and they're trying to ensure that the system is working for all Americans, not just for the elites. So that's what whistleblowers sacrifice themselves for, the public interest in some sense, and they are valuable assets in American democracy and have been for over 200 years.
In our last few moments, the news is coming at us really quickly these last couple of weeks, last few days for that matter. What are you watching for next as this current whistleblower story goes on?
Well, the thing that I think we should keep your eye on is what's happening in Europe, actually, because today the European Commission officially ratified comprehensive whistleblower protection for the European Union, and member states now have to make it national law in 2 years' time. And that's interesting because a lot of these corruption cases and money laundering run through countries in Europe, which means it's possible we'll have some European whistleblowers who will bring interesting information to light on the current situation.
Allison, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
That's Allison Stanger, professor of international politics and economics at Middlebury College. She's the author of the new book we've been talking about, Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. She joined us to talk about the role whistleblowers have played in American history from the Revolutionary War era to the latest headlines.